Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy here.
Gearing it up on a Tuesday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. One Bills Live coming at you from the Seneca Studios in Orchard Park at One Bills Drive. Set to carry you through the next 3 hours as we slowly turn the page from week one to week two. And good news right off the bat, at least according to Coach McDermott, is the injury sustained by linebackers Tremaine Edmonds and Matt Milano, not deemed to be long-term injuries. Those were Coach's words, not mine.
Yeah, day-to-day.
Put them in the day-to-day category. He also included DelShawn Phillips, another linebacker who sustained a quad injury in the game on Sunday, and Tyrell Dodson, who exited the game late. Tyler Matakavich came in for him for the last three plays on defense. He put them in the day-to-day category as well. Now, we should say there have been instances where the day-to-day designation does not ensure that that player is playing on Sunday. So we're really going to have to see how this plays out through the course of the week and who's on the practice field tomorrow, who's getting an extra day of rest to let something heal up potentially. So
the only thing it really tells us.
It's really a wait and see. The only thing it really tells us is none of these guys are probably headed to the three-week IR.
Right. Yeah, right. They're not gone for the season. That's about all.
Well, nobody is on IR unless specifically designated.
That's what I'm saying. They're not gone for the season, and they probably, even if they go to IR, all it says is that this injuries weren't catastrophic for their season. They may miss some time, but we don't know how much time that's going to be. Probably won't miss. They probably will miss some practices, take some days off, that kind of thing. Or they could go straight to the IR for 3 weeks, and we might miss them for a month. We don't know any of that stuff yet, but we just know, too, that they probably will play some more football this season. And that's about it.
Yeah. Monday Night Football, Steelers win. They beat the Giants, which I think was largely expected. Titans win a squeaker over the Broncos, 16-14, and it probably shouldn't have been that close when you consider the fact that Steven Gostkowski, in his debut for the Titans, missed three field goals and an extra point before finally hitting the game winner for a two-point victory. So
Tyler Bass not looking so bad, is he?
36-year-old Steven Gostkowski, you know, probably if you had a kicker Hall of Fame, he would be in it.
Yeah. I don't think
that's a rough day.
Yeah, that's
that is a rough day. And it's not like the Titans haven't been down this road before. The Bills game last year in week five.
Cost them.
Their kicker missed three kicks. I can't even remember the name of the kicker now. Now that I'm thinking about it, I'll have to look that up. But they've been down this road before. It cost them the game. You could argue it cost them the game against the Bills. Right. And the Bills, you could argue, lost a game to the Browns last year.
Right.
Because Hauschka missed some kicks. So every team's been through it. It is difficult to stomach. And fortunately for the Titans, they didn't pay for it with a loss. They come out with a victory. And there was some criticism of Vic Fangio, the head coach for the Broncos, for not managing his timeouts all that well.
Right, and there's always going to be that. I've seen more analytics stuff going on talking about coaches going for it on fourth. We had Sean McVay got crushed for doing it. Andy Reid got praised for going for it. So there's a lot of that stuff going around. But using timeout, and I've always said I think it's kind of an art form. I don't think there's any question about it. I think it's hard to know when to do that. And now they've got all this help doing it. Some of these coaches, some of the staffs have a guy that's just the analytics guy on the headset. He's one of the voices to the head coach who says, hey, take a timeout here. Hey, this think about going for it if it's less than one or those kind of things. Most clubs have a guy who's a timeout coach, a game management coach is what they call it. And sometimes coaches listen to them, sometimes they don't, and sometimes they listen to them and they're wrong, and sometimes they listen to them and they're right. I don't know how it's a matter of trust, but there is a spot on most staffs for a guy who's game management.
Yeah, and there are varying degrees of coaching philosophies on this too. There are some coaches that still to this day go strictly by feel, you know, time and score, momentum in the game, how's my offense performing, how's my defense performing, and I'll make decisions therein. And then there are other coaches who go strictly by the letter of the statistics and the analytics.
Right.
And there are baseball managers that do this too, guys that are married to the figures and the numbers. And there are younger coaches in this league that stick to the analytics almost to the letter, or in this case, to the number.
Right.
And there are probably a handful that are somewhere in between. Vic Fangio doesn't strike me as a guy that puts too much stock in the analytics. And not just because he's, you know, a 55, 56-year-old coach, but he said as much. I think his first year as head coach of the Broncos last year, he said, yeah, I know about the analytics. I don't use them all that much. Okay. So there it is. So I don't know if he has a game management coach or not. But Chris
Santos was the kicker for the Titans last year.
Or Cairo Santos.
Cairo Santos.
Yeah. And he was promptly released after that game last year.
He missed a 50-yarder. He missed what was it? He missed a ton. Yeah, it was a bad day for him.
You saw Gostkowski last night in Monday Night Football. His second kick, classic overcompensation.
Yeah.
He pushes the first one wide right as a right-footed kicker, and then he just puts a mean old hook on the second one and hooks that one left. And I was like, And when you see that, it's on. He's all over the place.
Yeah.
And it just became Buckshot City.
I said this about Tyler Bass on the broadcast, and even yesterday I brought it up. His kicks were consistently headed right. Two of them were outside the upright, and the other one was just inside. And I think you got to hit those. I get it, but hitting it consistently is what you're after. Now I think, and I'll say it again, I think he was jacked up, and he was just overstriding into the ball. I think his plant foot was landing a little bit too far downfield. I'm talking about, you know, an inch and a half or 2 inches, and his foot wasn't coming through the ball.
But so when that happens and you take – and I feel like I can speak on this somewhat, having a soccer background. But
right.
When you do that and you stride past the ball, it doesn't allow your swing to come all the way through for the point of impact that you're looking for. So if you overstride and you hit it, you're hitting it earlier than you normally would, and that is what leads to a push where it'll fade on you and go out to the right as a right-footed kicker. Whereas if you understride, you run the risk of hooking the ball because your follow-through has come through further, and now you're pulling it to your left.
And obviously, you know, if you ever go out and walk through in your yard with everybody's kicked in the yard at Thanksgiving or whatever, you get the idea of how important the hold is. It's got to be in the spot you pick so that your foot is going to be coming through the right way. And then, because all the other variables, the kicker seems to be, he should be able to control.
Yeah.
But the ball's got to be on that spot where he places it. And that's why, and on short field goals, I've never been, I get it. It's no fun to kick the laces, but even if you kick the laces or whatever, that ball's going through on a short field goal.
Yeah.
The ones where you need it just perfect are the ones where the margin of error is just a little bit small, you know, on the 50-plus yarders. And you need to hit a fat part of the ball. You need to hit away from the laces so you can get through it and all of that. But on the short kicks, these guys drive it through those uprights. It's not going to waver, you know, unless it's, you know, the wind has a chance to grab it.
Right.
So the hold is the most important thing for me, and you can ask kickers this, is the ball has got to be on that spot at the right vertical angle that the kicker likes.
Yeah.
We've seen a ton of missed kicks in week one. Not just last night in the Bills game, but other teams as well. I mean, look at the Cincinnati Bengals are standing there going, woof. They had an extra point.
Yeah, Randy Bullock.
To tie it up at the last play of the game.
That might have been one of the
Oy.
That might have been the ugliest kick of the week.
You tell me.
I mean,
how
it was
bad.
Over it was over in the stands.
How?
Like if you had the set of uprights that you normally have in the middle of the field, and then you put a second set of uprights to the right of that, I don't think he would have put it through that one.
Brownie, picture.
That's how off it was.
Picture the walk to your car from the stands here at Bill Stadium if you have to walk the just as a fan, getting out of your seat and walking to your car after a game like that where your home kicker skanks one so bad at a 45-degree angle.
It might have made it if he had a second set of uprights.
It would have, but the point is.
I was just like, whoa.
It was an extra point.
And then he's like, I'm cramping.
He cramped up. He
Joe Burrow's like,
oh,
son of a
my gosh.
Nutcracker.
Welcome, Joe Burrow. Welcome to the NFL. Wow.
We should also mention.
That was an absolutely perfect hold.
We should also mention that the kick that drew a lot of Twitter blowback, at least people hitting me up, after Bass's first miss, which appeared to go over the top of the post, top of the right post. Yeah. People are like, how come they're not checking that? Every play is reviewable. That play is actually not a reviewable play.
Yeah, because it's above, and you can see there it bent, with the wind pushed it. He had it going. Maybe it might have been right center, but then it just it went hard right, and a lot of people said, and I've gone over it. I've had even in the parking lot, I had a can and a cigar. And I was showing these guys, showing the guys how it, the inside edge of that ball, the football, all it has to do is go over the outside edge
of
the pipe.
Yeah.
That means once it gets above the uprights, the goal post becomes wider, functionally wider. Because, if it's going to hit the upright, it's going to bounce backwards. The only way it bounces through is if it barely glances. But if it barely glances, or if it would have barely glanced outside, that's good up above the post.
Up above the post.
So that's been looked at by a lot of people.
It was really close.
And I get it.
And
I get it.
After
I,
the
I know
Bills
lasers, looked, yeah. camera angles. You can get lasers. A camera, put it up there. And if the ball, and on the replay, you'd be able to see the laser flash on the ball. All of that,
Where we're going to get?
Just
speaking of lasers?
I know.
You know where we're going to get?
Where? What?
There are going to be two beams on the bottom of on the field, directly underneath the outside of each of the posts.
Right. That's
like
what
this,
I'm yeah.
And they're going to shoot them straight into the sky.
Yeah.
And they're going to say, did that thing
well,
graze the
they'll
laser?
They'll have to put it on the post because if the
well,
winds,
yeah, they mount it on the post.
They'll mount it on the post. And if they if the posts are
did it touch the laser?
If the wind's blowing the uprights back and forth,
ooh, you get a few extra inches
or less, one or the
or
other,
less,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, although if you're going to put it towards into the wind and it's blowing the thing away from the, you can't see me. You can't see me. My finger. I've got two fingers up in 11, and I'm
like
leaning
like
them the
like
same way. That's the. Oh, that was just off. But that's what right now, today, everybody's going, what are you waiting on? Put that in. Let's go. What are you doing? I'm like, come on, bro. So.
Okay.
Brown,
back.
You're back. You're Mike. How long has that been in?
I don't know.
It wasn't my fault. But I'm telling you, what have you been doing? Let's go get a laser on that thing.
Get a laser.
Blah, blah, blah. Get the laser.
Get the laser.
And
that would be interesting.
How long
have I been talking, Steve, about getting a laser to properly spot the ball? You run it on a track across the field from sideline to sideline.
There's too much garbage between that and then.
Not if you get rid of the chain gang. You don't need them anymore. You get that laser going.
You got to have a chain gang, bro. It's football. Got to have a chain
have you
gang.
Seen
you got to
have
the two.
Have you seen the commercial
yes.
with the two guys?
and
one guy's in the bathroom and the other guy's got the chain.
They got the chain between the
my God, that was good.
You got to have a chain. You got to have the guys with the chains. Yeah, you got to. Come on. Although, if the laser
they do
works,
need it to spot the plus, football, though. You I am can't have continue lasers, to push for that.
You can't have the lasers because the field's got a crown on it. I mean, you know, so it,
not as many of them do anymore. Some of the grass fields still do, but not to the degree that they used to be, especially here. Right. That was ridiculous.
Yeah, listen, how many times would lasers solve all our problems in football?
I don't know about all the problems, but they could solve some of them, like that kick last week. Bass's first
and then,
miss,
you know, here's
which
the
was
thing.
Really, really, really close.
That's – I can't think of another kick that it would have – you know, it happens, what, once a year? Not even.
I think more than once a year. I would say four or five times. With all the kicks that are attempted, you figure each kicker for each team, on average, probably about 27, 28 attempts.
Right.
Every year?
But how many
times
of them?
Times 32?
There's not that many guys that are hitting it over the top of the upright. Particularly
well,
on a longer.
That's valid.
Exclude three quarters of the kicks because they're outside.
We're talking almost 900 attempts.
Yeah, but you're talking about only 300 of them have a chance to even be above the upright.
A really?
Third of them. Yeah. And you're talking about, like, even
I
if
don't
it's.
I don't know if I'm agreeing with your math on that one.
I mean, most of these kicks aren't even anywhere near over the top of the upright. They're not even that high.
Oh, you're saying over the top of the upright.
I
misunderstood you. I'm thinking crossbar. So
No. The uprights. They're not over the uprights. I mean, they're, you know, it's probably less than.
I would say there's probably a handful every
Not even 10%.
Year. I would say maybe, well, 10% is eight. So I was going to say a handful.
Yeah, but 10% are over the, are good, high enough to go over it, but like one in a thousand of that 10%.
Or what am I saying? 10% is 89.
Yeah, but
89.
Only one out of every thousand of those are over one of the uprights and not between or way out.
Right.
I mean, why? I mean, I get it. I mean, we want to get it right all the time, but that seems superfluous.
Superfluous, yes.
To say the least.
So we've got a full show today.
How did we get down that rabbit hole?
Well, we just kept going.
Wow.
We don't stop. You know, once we start getting off on a tangent.
Sorry about
I'm sorry. We don't come back for a while, and that's how we fill 3 hours. Let's be honest with you.
You touched into something I thought I knew something
about.
It's
not like we don't have the time. But a full show today. We've got one Kyle Brandt from Good Morning Football coming your way at 12:30. He had an interesting take on a debate they had on the show this morning between Cam Newton and Josh Allen. We'll ask Kyle where he came down on it, as he had a pretty passionate answer, shall we say. And so we'll talk to him about that, among other things, including some of the events of week one of this NFL season and maybe some of the Monday night games. And then at 2 o'clock, we have the man who did the game on CBS last week between the Bills and the Jets with one Andrew Catalan, Hall of Famer James Lofton. Will join us at 2 o'clock, and we'll also hear from Coach McDermott, who addressed the media late yesterday, in addition to his update on Tremaine Edmonds and Matt Milano, putting them in the day-to-day category with their respective injuries. He addressed a bunch of other things, including ball security with Josh Allen, and we'll hear from Brian Daboll and Leslie Frazier. The two coordinators also spoke with the media yesterday, so we'll get their take on the performance in week one and things that they feel are on their to-do list for week two. It's going to be an interesting game, Steve, on Sunday, because for this game, there will be fans, although based on the percentages, we're talking about 15,000 approximately in the Dolphins Stadium this weekend, provided all the tickets are sold, and apparently it's a hot ticket down there, so we'll have to see what it brings.
Sure.
I don't think it's going to have a tremendous impact on the game
either.
In terms of noise.
I don't either. It's going to be a non-issue. I've already heard on my timeline and in social media, Bills fans want to head down there like they always do.
Yeah,
I don't know that that's a great idea for me personally.
Well,
I know
if you're coming from Western New York, it's not a great idea because you will have to
quarantine.
Upon your return, you'll have to quarantine for 14 days since Florida is perpetually in the red as one of the states on the COVID list. So
just save it up. Save it up until you can come to Bill Stadium and
you'll appreciate it all the more.
Watch the game like we normally do and be a factor there.
Yeah.
You know.
We also have the Twitter poll, and it surrounds the great debate that a lot of Bills fans were having on this show yesterday and just about everywhere where they could comment, social media and the like, about the amount of times Josh Allen is carrying the football. Some people they're biting their nails down to the nub because they're worried about him taking the wrong hit and being out for 2 or 3 weeks, whether it's in concussion protocol or, God forbid, with some kind of injury. And then there are others that are saying, hey, he's a weapon. He was the only thing working for us in the run game with any consistency last week. We got to do it. So we want to know where you come down on that argument. How should the Bills use Josh Allen in the run game? And essentially, your choices are as follows. Okay, let me pull this up here. I'm a little behind. So the choices are, it's a weapon. Use it often. Only if it's a matchup edge with the opponent. Seldom one or two designed runs a game. Never. Not worth the risk. And the leader in the early voting, as we have almost 1,000 votes already, Steve, and we're not even
people
a half hour into
in.
The program, only if it's a matchup edge with an opponent. That's getting 45% of the vote.
That's kind of where I sit on this. I don't care. If use it when we need it. Use it when it makes sense. And go. And then I was reading the tweet she wrote. The first one I got to go to is this one. It's great. And this is kind of where I think the 46% stand from Ronnie. He says, listen, I'm all for using it. It's definitely a weapon. I'm not sure how often is the right word. I'm not sure often is the right word. I love seeing him run, and defenses can't stop him. But dang, kid, hold on to the ball and get out of bounds.
Right? Threw a southern twang in there on that one. You felt that was necessary?
I did, yeah, for emphasis. And just if you don't turn it over and you get out of bounds, don't take a hit, man. Run that thing every time. I don't care if you ain't going to get hit.
It's a constant debate, and Coach McDermott naturally was asked about this in his press conference yesterday, and we'll have his answer for you in the 1 o'clock hour a little later in the show. We want to hear what your take is on it first, and then we'll play you Coach's answer a little bit later in the program. You can also call us and let us know what you think at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. And we do want to go to the phones here as we open the show. And we're going to lead off today with Scott in Jamestown, who seems to be fired up already about the Dolphins game. So, Scott, what do you have for us?
I hope Josh Allen and the Bills scratch the fish this Sunday.
All right. Well, it's a short and sweet comment. Yeah, what's your thoughts about Josh and running the football? Do you get worried that he's going to get hurt, or do you want him to do it more?
I was shaking a little bit.
Shaking a little bit. I got you. Okay, we appreciate the call, Scott.
All right, Scott.
Yeah, I mean, some people do shake when Josh Allen runs a little bit. Either they're happy to see him gaining yardage, or they're concerned he's going to take the wrong hit at the wrong time.
It's a little bit like a moth in a flame. Yeah, I love it. It's great. It's a tremendous weapon. It's always the easiest yardage you get in a game where the quarterback takes off running, it's man coverage, and he's just chasing the defensive backs down the field before they realize he's going. And then he slides into second base, and it's like, sweet, first down, let's go. Nice 19-yard run kind of thing.
It's like, then, I don't know.
Right.
Oh, great, 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 great.
Then you always get the time where Josh decides to tuck it under his arm and go head first. He gets his head whacked. The ball pops up, and now they're going the other direction, and Josh is out for the game.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, who wants that?
It's a tricky balance. I don't think there's any question. It's a tricky balance. Let's go to Chris in Texas and see what he has to say about this Josh Allen run game debate. Where do you come down on this one, Chris?
Hey, how y'all doing today, sister?
Good. Doing good.
Josh, I think, is a huge weapon for us. There's only a few quarterbacks that can run and pass as he does. It makes a third option for our running game. Obviously, if he gets hurt, everybody will regret it. But I think that him being an asset in the running game, it makes those defenses just have to prepare for him as well. So I think it's a go, and I think we should do it.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. I read this on Twitter yesterday. I cannot find it again. It was a statistic from one of the media guys that cover the league. There were five quarter as of before last night's games. I didn't keep track of last night's games. Up until last night's games, five quarterbacks in the National Football League led their team in rushing on Sunday. Five quarterbacks led their team in rushing. Of course,
like Cam Newton,
Josh was one.
Kyler Murray,
Russell Wilson, all those quarterbacks were 5-0.
They won on Sunday.
All five of the quarterbacks who led their teams in rushing on this last weekend, weekend one of the National Football League, all five guys who led their team in rushing won.
Yep.
So and add that into the mix.
Yeah, and here's the other thing that I don't think everybody – it may not cross the mind of everyone when they think about this. From a play-calling perspective, snapping the ball to the quarterback and having him run is one of the safest plays to execute because only two people are touching the ball and only one guy is making a decision and only one guy can be right or wrong. You call any kind of pass play, the quarterback could be right or wrong, the receiving target could be right or wrong, the protection could be right or wrong. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Like there are so many more variables at play on one of those kinds of plays. For that quarterback read option, it's basically on the QB to make the right or wrong call, and right. Nobody's going to make the right call every time in terms of reading the defense, but it's a relatively safe play. Now, I know some people are going to be like, well, how safe is it? You had two turnovers last week. Well, yes, that is a risk on every play, just as it's a risk on every play for somebody getting hurt. I mean, this is a barbaric sport, let's be honest. You know, you could... Anybody could get hurt on any kind of play that you draw up. So, I don't know. Somebody, I suppose, could put together some kind of logarithm to determine what is the most risky play for injury for quarterbacks, and maybe running a ball is.
No doubt. But you'll hear a lot of them, too, every time you do that. And people brought it up when Josh got
an algorithm, not a logarithm.
Josh got hit in the New England game last year and had to go out with a concussion. A lot of quarterbacks get injured standing in the pocket because, you know, they're going to take a shot when they hang on to the ball as long as they need to and then have the quick release and the guy's got one step and he bangs into him. What happens invariably is that if the hit doesn't bother him, somebody getting pushed into his legs does. The garbage coming around, they wrestle him to the ground, they pull him over his own left tackle or his right tackle, the guard gets pushed back into his knee or something like that. Guys get hurt that way. Josh Allen got his elbow hurt his rookie year when the guy, he was standing in the pocket throwing it.
Yeah,
so
his elbow on a helmet, yeah.
It's dangerous all the time. And I learned it the hard way when I played. I covered kicks for a lot of years, right? And I never had the ball in my hands. And so... You know, I was chasing guys, never gave it a second thought. I was trying to get them and put them on the ground hard, right? And then, for whatever reason, I got on the field and it was catching passes from Jim Kelly. I learned in like a quarter of a second, if you're holding the ball on the field in play, you're going to get whacked.
Yeah.
I mean, that
kill
ball
the guy
is,
with the ball.
It's a violence magnet. And the quarterback's got it every time. So It's you're going to get hit, and you're going to get hit hard. There's no avoiding it. So you do need to mitigate it for a guy like any quarterback who's going to have his hands on the ball every single play. Sooner or later, he's going to go down, and he's going to go down hard. It's nice to have a 6'5 guy who weighs 250 rather than a guy who's in Arizona who's 5'9", 195.
Yeah.
Although he can outrun just about everybody on the field.
He's pretty fast.
Lamar Jackson is 6'2", 215, 220.
No, he's not 220.
He can handle
210.
But he can handle some physical stuff.
And he can juke people out
but
of
they're
their
fast.
Shoes.
So you got to mitigate it somehow, and everybody brings something to the table. But I'm telling you, it is a roll of the dice.
Yeah.
It is a roll of the dice.
Let's go back to the phones at 803-0550. We go to Jamie in Grand Island, who I think is going to provide me with some support on the chain gang and not needing it if you have lasers. Jamie, what do you have for us?
Yeah, so can you guys hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, so I discovered this about 5 years ago, that in the NFL, the officials always spot the first down ball on an exact yard marker. So the officials on the field always know where a first down is. If the guy gets tackled at the 31 and a half, they put it on the 31 or the 32.
Yeah.
You'll
for first downs, yeah. I get it.
First down, so you always know where 10 yards is.
Yeah.
There's no need to take a measurement.
If
the nose of the ball is on that next yard marker, you know it, and they know it when they spot the ball. The only time that's not true is when it's inside the 10-yard line, you know, when you're getting ready to score.
Yeah.
If he gets tackled at the 6.5, they'll put it at the 6.5, irrelevant for measurements.
Jamie, that's not exactly true.
What?
If you watch the games now, I've been doing this for 5 years. Anytime that's not true is when there's a quarterback sneak on a short distance and it's very obvious that they're going to spot it right there?
You mean after the play is over and after they measure it?
After a play is over. I'm not talking second down, third down.
Yeah.
I'm talking first down.
First downs only.
The first down.
Yeah.
They will purposely put it right on the yard marker, on the hash.
I'll tell you another thing.
So they know what 10 yards is to the inch.
Right.
They do it to help themselves.
And I'll tell you another thing they do as well. Go ahead.
The game, they don't have to bring it out for measurements as often. There's very few times during a game on a first down that they don't put it right on the marker.
Yeah, I can see that. Second down, they'll put it at the four and a half yard line.
They may do it after they've measured, and they don't want to be so obvious as to move the ball up or back half a yard.
There's very few people like Jamie who have been watching
but
this
here's the thing.
for the last five years to know.
They really don't need to do that because on the sideline, they clip the chain on a yard marker itself. So when they bring it out there, you know, they don't measure it from the where the ball first down was. They measure it from the nearest full 5 yard stripe. So the guy has
when they're going out for a measurement.
So they have that marked anyway, no matter where they mark it on the field.
Right, but that mark at 5 yards is based on putting that football all the way back 10 yards back on first down, which is where you put the first stick, which leads to that chain being at five. Why
it's not? They don't do it because that clip is the measurement, not the chains.
Well, then that begs the question, why do you have a 10-yard chain? Why don't you have a 5-yard chain?
Well, because when they mark the ball, they put the thing on the point of the ball. They put the chain on the point of the ball. When they got that marked for the first down, then the guy takes that. You'll see it. There's a third guy.
And he'll slide it up the chain
He clips it on there into the chain link that is exactly on the edge of the yard marker on the hash. They have sideline hash marks.
Yeah.
And they all coincide. So he moves that clip to the right marker, and that's where they measure from. They don't measure from the other pole. They measure from the clip that's closest to where the first down will be.
Okay. And there's a lot more that we could have with that conversation, but we do have to take a break. And when we return, we're going to have one Kyle Brandt from Good Morning Football had an interesting take on a debate they had this morning between Cam Newton and Josh Allen. We'll talk to him about where he came down on that side of the fence. And we'll probably talk to him a little bit about the Monday night games, the week one that was, and finally that we have football amidst all these COVID restrictions. Plenty to come with Kyle Brandt next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Back on One Bills Live, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, broadcasting from the Seneca Studios in Orchard Park. And set to join us in just one moment is the man who had an interesting debate with one Peter Schrager on his own program, Good Morning Football, about a month ago. And they were discussing the merits of the rushing abilities of one Josh Allen and one Cam Newton, who is now in the division. And let's see what one Kyle Brandt had to say about that.
Nate, with all due respect to Cam's dancing in sweatpants in practice, Josh Allen was dancing in the end zone of a road playoff game at 23 years old last January. I'm going with Josh in a runaway. Cam, maybe it'll pan out. I hope it does. He's an incredible athlete. Respect for it. But give me a ride on that rocket in Buffalo. Young, jumping over people, doing this. It's like, this was Cam Newton in 2015, guys, but it wasn't 5 years ago. Plus, when he breaks the pocket, he's going to throw it to Diggs or Smokey or whoever the hell else they have around him. I think it's Josh Allen. I'm praying the Cam Newton thing works just for our show, but I know the Josh Allen thing is going to work, and it's going to work this year, not left shark year, this year.
There you go.
That left shark year. That's the part that I think I enjoyed the best. But let's welcome him in right now from Good Morning Football, one Kyle Brandt. And I think it's when you get passionate about these debate topics on the show that really get people's juices flowing, Kyle. And then when you weave in the pop culture on top of it with a lot of references that are in my age category, being a Gen Xer, it gets me fired up. So we enjoy it. Glad to have you back for another season, Kyle. How you doing? How did week one treat you?
Oh, well, first of all, I'm thrilled to be here, Chris and Steve. I'm thrilled to be back for another year. I'm thrilled to be talking about the 2020 AFC East champion Buffalo Bills. And it's going to be fantastic.
Threw it right out there.
How did week one treat me?
What? Not the
AFC? It happened. Week one actually happened. There were 16 football games. And I don't care if every one of them was 3-0. We had them. We played them. We're on to week two. The Bills are undefeated. I don't know if you know this, Chris, but I started last year with this conversation here. So it's not a coincidence that when I come in and talk to you guys, the Bills are in the playoffs. I plan to continue that streak this year. Only this year, it's not the wild card.
That's right. And we got a ton of – you're like us. We talk Bills football and NFL all day, every day, and so do you there in New York. So it is – now we've got a pool full of content to talk about. Big picture stuff, small picture stuff. The big picture for week one, the officials, they were up and down a little bit. I mean, there was some controversy, but none of this stuff like, you know, the NFC Championship game 3 years ago where there's a no call, and there's none of that. You know, none of that stuff happened. The games went off. Some of them were out of hand. Some teams looked like they were in the preseason. Other teams looked pretty much regular season ready. What are your thoughts about the big picture of this? 2 months ago, we were like, maybe this ain't going to happen. But now, hey, let's go.
Well, I'm like you guys. I'm sure you had a ton of people asking you. I mean, not even 2 months ago. As recently as 3 or 4 weeks ago, typically that time of year, it's who should I take in my fantasy draft? Right. Who should I take in my office pool? What do you think of this? That wasn't the question this year. The question I would get texted to me was, are there going to be games? Are we going to have a season? And I would say, man, I would put that at mid-August. I'm still getting those questions. And you know what my answer was? Don't know, stand by, and then like a scary face emoji. I did not know. We pulled it off. It's and yet there's this tendency, I think, or maybe we're all reaching for it to say, here we go, full season, we're going to do it. We got there, Super Bowl. I'm still trying to pump the brakes because in a few weeks, we're going to hit bye weeks. Players are going to have vacation. Who knows what they're going to do? I'm still terrified that we have a team based in Las Vegas who's yet to have their home game, which means they've yet to have a road team go to Las Vegas. And you got a 23-year-olds with, you know, who just got their first game check, and they're like, wait a second, are you telling me that Mandalay Bay is about 2 blocks that way? I guess I'm supposed to stay in my hotel room. It makes me very nervous. But let's focus on the positive. We got one down, 15 to go, and then playoffs. It happened, guys.
Right.
Blackjack in the craps table is going to be the biggest deterrent to keeping people COVID negative.
Vegas is going to – it's right. You know, you think about it. Vegas could be the black hole of the 2020 season.
Maybe a whole new meaning to the black hole, right?
Yeah,
the Raiders?
Whole new meaning to it, right?
And it's not just the gambling, guys. There's other indulgences that young people can take in Las Vegas, too, that are a whole different type of trap.
Yeah, that's right. So give us an idea here. Football came back. Any surprises? What was your big takeaway maybe in an individual player who kind of wowed you over week one?
Well, I like to be shot out of a cannon with you guys and say this is going to be great and this is going to be awesome. However, I'm the Debbie Downer today. I was so disappointed by the Bucs. This was the one. You know, this was supposed to – we've talked about this for months, and this was going to be – the dream team in Barcelona, and it's going to be the Globetrotters. And then they came out, and it was like, this is what we've been waiting for? It was the Chinese Democracy album from Guns N' Roses. Like, this is the team? I didn't even recognize Brady, and apparently Brady didn't even recognize Gronkowski. Brady had better chemistry with Janoris Jenkins than he had with Rob Gronkowski. And I know there's supposed to be sloppiness, and week one this, week one that. It was a rough, rough start for Tom Brady. Now, I don't know if that was like being in a spa for Bills fans, just watching Brady do his best Jameis Winston impression. But as a guy who covers the whole league, like, this isn't what I wanted from this. If we're going to go dream team with this thing, let's go dream team. I know it was a tough draw with the Saints, but I was hoping for better than that. That was a rough, rough start.
Yeah, I know you've got to throw, you know, a giant canopy over the entire league and try to assess it over the course of your program. So you can't watch every single game, every single play. The thing that kind of grabbed Steve and I with respect to Josh this week against the Jets was the concerted effort to just go short to intermediate with him. And I just know watching every game that Josh has ever played, play by play by play here with the Bills, Steve and I never really envisioned Josh being the kind of quarterback that's going to be like a Breeze or a Rodgers with a completion percentage of somewhere between 68 and 70%. That's not who he is. But on Sunday, that is who he was. I mean, almost 72% completion. Their longest play was 29 yards. So everybody's worried about the deep ball accuracy, and Brian Daboll put together a game plan and said, the hell with that. We're just going to nickel and dime the hell out of the Jets. Josh is going to complete passes up around 70%, and we're going to win going away. I'm just wondering if it's going to head that way going forward or if this was just a one-week deal. What do you think?
It might. Let's remember, like, this guy's still a baby. He's an NFL baby. Those guys you mentioned, Rodgers and Breeze, when they were at Josh Allen's stage of his career, Rodgers was sitting on the bench. Breeze was soon to be gone from San Diego. Like, there's a totally different path here. And I thought it was interesting, to your point, looking at Stephon Diggs' stats, because you think, all right, we're launching bombs to him. We're going to take the top off. It's going to be bombs away with him and Brown. 8 catches was great, 80-some yards, and you think, well, it was dink and dunk. I actually like that. That shows to me, that shows chemistry. That shows efficiency. It'd be one thing if Diggs had 2 catches and one of them was a 70-yarder. Sure, it'd be exciting, but they're already off and running here. This is production, and maybe Josh Allen is that guy. You know, we all had our expectations of him coming out of Wyoming. He's going to throw the deep ball, and then last year we started saying, all right, well, he's going to be a runner. If he can do this, then we're starting to do everything. I actually thought it was really cool, not only that they had that game plan you talked about, but that Allen could do it. Because it's nice to say short passes and timing passes, but if he starts missing, everyone in the national media has decided to say that, well, he has accuracy problems and he always will. Look, you can fix that. You know, he's a young, young quarterback. Now we just got to get him to hold on to the damn ball when he runs. Can we fix that?
Where is the best place that Bills fans could completely overreact in the positive and also the negative? I mean, is it the Bills are all of that? They won going away in a game where they didn't play that well, didn't play their best, or they were playing the Jets?
Okay. I see. I like that question. It's a matter of extreme. The positive is, I mean, it's kind of where I am. I've already used the word juggernaut. Here's the positive. I don't see a weakness with this team. I really don't, right down to their kicker, the Bass kicker. I think they're going to be a 12-game winner, their coach is brilliant, and they're going to go to their title game and maybe they win it. That's the positive. You know what the negative is? The negative is now Cam Newton is going to be an MVP candidate. We finally got Brady the hell out of here, and now we got to deal with Cam Newton, and it's Bill Belichick's new Project X that he rips the curtain off of in his science laboratory, and Cam's going to give the Pats 5 or 6 great years. Because, guys, look, it's not what Bills fans want to hear, but that went really well in Buffalo, or rather in Foxborough, really well. I mean, that was smooth. There were smiles. McDaniels and Cam are fist bumping. I never saw Brady fist bump McDaniels. It started well.
Right.
I just wonder, I mean, they relied a lot on Cam's legs, though. I mean, I guess they're waiting for the passing game to materialize to the point where McDaniels and Belichick are like, I think we're good this week. I think we can connect enough in the passing game, you know, with a new quarterback and all his new targets. You know, he's still got young players in this receiving core. You know, I'm wondering how long they wait on that, because do you want to lean on Cam's legs that much? I mean, what did he have? 75 yards rushing. What did he have? 90 something or 100 and something yards passing? I mean,
I know he had 15 carries.
Yeah. So I mean, when do we think we might see that shift where McDaniel says, you know what, Cam, you know, let's put it in neutral this week and throw it a little bit more?
Well, I thought the biggest myth going into this season was this idea that Cam is going to be Michael Jordan in the second half of his career when he couldn't dunk anymore and he had to rely on the turnaround jump shot. He's going to change his game. I don't think so. I never envisioned Cam Newton sitting there throwing to Edelman 11 times a game, timing pass here, over the middle here. And I don't think McDaniels and Belichick did either, because that's not the game that they called. I don't think Cam Newton's ever going to be that. I don't think he's going to turn into Drew Brees just because he's a little older. It's not what makes Cam special. I think the reason you bring him in is say, look, the doctors say he's healthy, and we want to do this, what we're seeing on our screen right now. Unleash this guy. The hell with it. If he breaks down, we took a shot. But we're not going to sit here and have him throw 40 times a game so he can complete 20 of them and we lose just to keep him healthy. Guys, I think this is the plan. It's funny because there's so much similarity between New England and Buffalo. The size, the physicality of their quarterbacks, the running, whether it makes their fan bases a little nervous that they can keep it up. There's a lot. It's already 1 week in. Here's the ultimate overreaction, Steve. 1 week in, it already feels like the Bills and Patriots are on this collision where they're going to have to face off and say either we're the new kids on the block or saying get the hell out of here. It's still our turf.
Right. And then, I mean, the last one I've got for you is just with regard to the matchup for the Bills this weekend, which is the Dolphins coming off that 10-point loss to the Patriots. there wasn't a lot of corner talent on the field for the Jets last week, and so Dable said, let's go four wide or three wide. 95% of their pass plays are in 11 or 10 personnel. This week, you got two corners that are pretty darn good in Xavien Howard and Byron Jones. So do you think the approach is drastically different for the Bills, number one? And then number two, how do you kind of see this one playing out, knowing Fitz is going to play again in week two here, no Tua yet?
Well, I think you look for Singletary and Moss from the Bills. I think this is going to be their ascension. This is going to be their emergence this week. I think you run it. Look what the Pats did against them. And as much as we love Fitzpatrick, I mean, who doesn't? He has an undefeated approval rating. Everybody, especially in Buffalo, loves him. Guys, the Bills should wipe this team out. They're way better, way more talented. Let's get used to the new reality with Buffalo now. There's some teams that they should blow out. You don't always have to white-knuckle it in the fourth quarter. I want to see them roll over on this team because after a while, it's what the Pats did, and the Bills are more talented. Their quarterback in the system is more experienced. This should be a double-digit win. Miami, we love Brian Flores, and that's great. We love Fitz. Bills are a juggernaut. Show them your juggernaut.
All right, last one for me. We had in an offseason where everybody thought the league was going to go broke, and I kind of say that laughing.
Yeah.
You got a ton of guys signing extensions. Jalen Ramsey and Tre'Davious White. Tre'Davious signed a team-friendly deal. He signed first, and he's one of the all-time fun guys to be around. Jalen Ramsey, who is a phenomenal player. Who's better? Who do you want on your team more? I mean, you want Jalen Ramsey, who has a different skill set than Tre'Davious White.
Well, he's a chance taker.
And he's a chance taker. Or do you want Tre'Davious White, a guy who is just so – and kind of elevates the temperament of everybody on the field and in the stadium?
Not saying this to be a homer. It's an easy decision for me. Give me Trey White. First of all, he's cheaper. Second of all, I like his personality better. Jalen kind of runs hot. He can be a little cold-blooded sometimes, whereas Trey is all about smiling, having fun. That moment when he picked up the other team's game plan on the field is still one of the funniest moments of last year. And I'll put it this way, too. In week one, Jalen got smoked by the Cowboys in a huge moment. Michael Gallup torched him. He hammed up the pass interference, and he got the call because he's a known player and a star. Anybody else wouldn't have gotten it. So after one week, Trey's not gotten smoked. Jalen has better personality, cheaper. It's Trey White and a runaway.
All right, Kyle. Thanks, Kyle, as always, for the time. Look forward to getting Kyle in here each and every week to digest the week that was in the NFL and talk some Bills as well. Thanks, as always, Kyle, for your time.
See you, man.
See you next week at 2-0, gentlemen.
All right. Kyle Brandt from Good Morning Football. I just love his takes, you know. Like, he just goes off on a tangent. And I got to ask him at some point in time, does he kind of just generally think about what he's going to say and then just go off on a two-minute diatribe and just completely off the cuff? Or is there some semblance of an idea on the little things that he wants to hit through the course? Because some amazing of his references,
his cross references are,
oh my gosh,
on
the
money.
Pop culture references,
they're money,
are great.
Yeah. But he's a little bit in the same boat you and I are, and I mentioned it during the interview. You know, Good Morning Football with Kay Adams and Pete Schrager and the group,
Nate Burleson.
They talk football for 4 hours a day, just like you and I talk for 3 hours a day. And ours is Bills and NFL, and theirs is all NFL all the time. So he kind of gets that. He's in that same mentality as us.
Yeah, you're going to get pretty deep in the weeds.
Yeah, you're like going down the rabbit hole with the kickers we did in the first segment. You know what I mean? You just kind of find yourself. Yeah. You sit up and go, how did I get here?
Yeah.
But I love his takes. He cross-references everything, and he can bring stuff in from other teams and other conferences that are kind of the same, and it's always fun to have him on. His energy and the fact that he is kind of deep in the weeds with you and me kind of makes it fun.
All right, we got to take a break, but when we return, we'll get back to the phones at 803-0550 as we're talking Josh Allen and the degree to which you feel comfortable seeing him run the football. We got choices for you on the Twitter poll, so hop on One Bills Live on Twitter to voice your opinion there, or give us a call, 803-0550. Back in a moment here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Time now for Reed's Milestones. Josh Allen, 33 of 46 passing, 312 yards, two touchdowns, no picks, a 104.6 passer rating against the Jets. As we all know, it was Allen's first career 300-yard passing game. It was the most passing yards by a Bill in a win since Ryan Fitzpatrick in the comeback game, Week 3, 2011, when the Bills won 34-31. Fitzy threw for 369 yards in that game. Reed's Milestones, Reed's Gens, the official jeweler of the Buffalo Bills. And we are talking Josh Allen, of all things. And how much should this guy be running? How much is too much, I guess, is the question here. And it's a debate that goes on and on and on and on. And we're happy to have it with you. And so we will go back to the phones at 803-0550. And we will lead off with one Milton in Buffalo. Milton, what do you have for us?
Yeah, I need the higher-ups to hear this. Listen, when you up 21 to nothing and you're down like on a 23-yard line, there's nothing wrong with running the ball and not using Allen. We could have went up 24 to nothing and probably sealed the game.
I had this conversation yesterday, Milton, and I get what you're saying, but running Josh Allen on the surface should be safer than handing the ball off to somebody else. There's less ball handling and all of that. And
yeah, there's one exchange, not two.
There's one exchange, not two. But I get your point. Run it to somebody who's a professional runner instead of a professional thrower kind of guy. But I get it. Go ahead.
He already fumbled before that when he was down there on the 20.
Milton, I got news for you. Whether he fumbles it or not, you're not taking the ball out of his hands. They're not. They don't care if he fumbles. They don't want
well,
him.
Well, they care, but
it doesn't matter. He's not going to get benched because he fumbled a pass, and they want to give him the ball again so he's not afraid to run it next time and afraid to fumble it. So his fumbles, the last play, have nothing to do with how many times he's going to run it in the next coming series.
No, listen to what I'm saying. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that since he did, and we're down there and it's 21 to nothing, hand the ball off. Feel me? But – and I want to say, we need to bring Hauschka back. I don't trust the kicker. I don't. I don't want the game to come down to a kick, and you know, and that'll happen, and we all the way down there.
Here's the thing, I get you. He's right. I mean, I hear you, Milton, and it's going to take time.
That might have more people nervous than Josh Allen running the football.
Right. Tyler Bass got a lot of people nervous. I get it, and it's going to take some time for Tyler Bass to earn back the trust, if he ever had it, with Bills fans. He's going to have to hit some big kicks, and he's going to have to hit them all in a row for people to say, okay, I see it. You know, I get it. But I'll say this. If you get into a game, and the Bills have had this happen, if you get into a game where you need a 50-yarder to win it, I like Steven Hauschka as much as anybody, but he's not hitting it.
Yeah, it was evident, and we started to see it a little bit last year, because when he first got to Buffalo, when the Bills first signed him, I think he was in the top five most accurate kickers from 50 yards plus in league history.
Yeah, and he was good for
the
Bills.
Right now, he is the 11th most accurate kicker in league history. So a fantastic resume, a fantastic career. But it was clear towards the end of last year that those 50-plus yard field goal attempts were not available to Sean McDermott to decide upon because he just couldn't get it there, right, especially in the colder months.
And it
was evident this year in training camp, too.
And this year it would have been less than 50. It would have been a 45 or 47-yarder that wouldn't have been available.
And every single kickoff that went through the back of the end zone this past Sunday, that would not have been the case, especially kicking towards the scoreboard end on the kickoffs that Bass made. So it was more than just missing kicks. There's another special teams element to that, which is the kickoff and getting a higher touchback percentage, which you unquestionably get with Bass. You do not get that with Hauschka. So it was twofold. I think all Bass had to do coming into training camp this year was proved that he could be as consistent on field goal attempts as Hauschka, and in the training camp setting, he was. Yeah. Now, still, there is the clutch factor that comes into play here because regular season games and playoff games carry much different kinds of pressure than a training camp competition. And that, and Brandon Bean has said himself, we'll know soon enough if we made the right call. We have to take a break as we're at the top of the hour. Got a sports update coming your way, and then more of your phone calls on this Josh Allen carrying the ball debate. How much is too much? Should it be done anyway? Because it is such a potent weapon. We want your take on that. We'll also hear from Sean McDermott, who addressed that very topic as well with the media on Monday. All of that to come next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.